Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
As Obi-Wan Kenobi once said, hello there. And he also said, many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view. My name is Joseph Scrimshaw. Welcome to Favorite Points of View. This show is a part of the Force Center podcast feed, and here on Force Center, we like to celebrate Star Wars, and with me to celebrate is Ken Knapsack.
I've got some cake, I've got some hat and a balloon, I'm celebrating Star Wars.
I got cake, hat, and a balloon. What could possibly go wrong? Maybe if a pony showed up, it could get even better. If you're listening to this kind of episode on Force Center for the first time, what it is we just really want to celebrate that having a different point of view, having a different favorite thing in Star Wars can be a point of understanding one another and a point of celebrating all the different ways that there are to love Star Wars. Often it is a celebration of the fact that we all start our journeys with Star Wars at different times, and that often informs what is our favorite and why. And we just like to do these episodes once in a while to hear other people's points of view, to share them, and to celebrate. This particular episode, we asked some patrons on our Patreon what their favorite ship or vehicle is in Star Wars and kind of why it means something to them. So we got a bunch of great responses. We're going to do two episodes. This is our first episode of Favorite Points of View on Ships and Vehicles. Ken, how do you wrestle with this question? I know whenever you ask someone their favorite, you know, it's always hard. He's like, I don't want to pick. Do you have a favorite vehicle, or is it a, here's my favorite 72 vehicles?
Yeah, it could easily be 72. I mean, honestly, you try to, it'd be harder to find the design that I don't like, you know, there's something I gravitate to, but even like something as simple as like the Rebel transport ship, you know, a flying slug, so to speak, as a kid is what kind of thought about, or it's a flying medicine pill or something. You know. even that, I like it.
It is a jagged big pill on like a jagged little pill.
90s rock. But when it popped up, and remember in the first Battlefront re-release in 2015, you have a couple of missions fighting underneath one thing, a Tatooine or something like that. I was like, oh god, I love this ship. It's like I never said that word, those words in my life. but it's there. But I do have, and a lot of folks know, even going back to the Jedi Alliance days, I love the Y-Wing, and people have been, they've sent me shirts and Y-Wings. I collect the Y-Wing stuff. It's because that's the toy I had. And my mom and dad couldn't afford a bunch of Star Wars toys, and I got that one. And the Force and fate aligned, and I just love that ship because it takes me back to those days. And I think that's part of what we always talk about at the core of our love of Star Wars. It can go down to the playground and go down to our earliest memories when we're exposed to it. So, yeah, I love speeder bikes. I love all that kind of stuff. I love Infant's Nest Cloud Rider thing. I'm looking at that right now. It's in my studio, and I just love it. I love the Razor Crest. You and I both love that ship and are sad of what happened to the Razor Crest. But the Y-Wing, those kind of things, it's the heart. It's connected to the heart.
Yeah, it's connected to the heart. It's connected to that personal, that first exposure, early exposure to Star Wars and to your personal experience of having the toy. That's great. I think I'm very much the same way as it would be easier to find one or two designs where like, I'm not sure about that. And then I struggle with a thing that you and I run into when we do your great Star Wars rank show of sometimes like, we got to just put something in the Hall of Fame, right? Because, you know, my favorite Star Wars ship is probably the Millennium Falcon or the X-Wing. But that's like saying, you know, my favorite food is water. You know, it's just like it's vital. Mm-hmm. It's just like a truth, a thing that exists. And I think because my favorites rotate a lot, when I think of my favorite ship, it kind of jumps to mind to something that's a little bit more different or recent, depending on the point of view. So when I think of them right now, a couple of things that jump to mind for me is the Republic gunship. Mm-hmm. Just one of the things that I always loved about the Clone Wars era, and I just love it more and more. I have found myself Googling the various toys of it, because like someday when I have more space, I need a Republic gunship. What is it, the low-altitude armored transport? It's just there's so much about it that's cool. It's sound, it's use in the stories, the open doors with the Jedi clinging on, the little rotating turrets for the blaster bubbles. Love it. And then for recent, he doesn't get a lot of love, but I just love in Rogue One that TIE Striker. It's just ways it's another TIE, but it's just got that great bat look. The weird logic that it is, you know, those solar panels are facing up because it's mostly a terrestrial ship. Just looks cool. And that is really, that's the bounty of ships and vehicles in Star Wars, is so many of them look cool and you can rotate around your favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned TIE Striker, there's an example of something where I was like, oh yeah, I get it when it popped up and I see in the movie and I'm like, oh, I like the movie. And it just kind of playing Star Wars Squadrons and you get to fly around and I was like, I just like it more. Now it's part of this universe. It's this Star Wars universe I love crawling around in. And it's like, again, I didn't campaign against it, but now my love for it has grown. And I love when ships and vehicles do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Low altitude assault transport. There we go. Verified.
I missed that one of my first Shmodo matches back in like 2015, 16. And I've never forgotten it after that. I had no idea. I was like, LAT. What does it stand for? Like, yeah, I know, LAT. It's LAT.
It's just its name. That's the name of that ship. LAT, the Republic gunship. You know, it's like Thomas the Tank Engine. LAT, the Republic gunship. Come on. It's clear. Low altitude assault transport. There we go. All right. We're going to move on to listeners and patrons' favorites. Ken, I'm going to read the first one and then we shall take some turns here. We start with Michael Newman. Here's what Michael has to say. Favorite might be a tough one to pin down, but a vehicle that has always intrigued me is the Sandcrawler. More so than it being cool, it just astounded me by being a living town that moves around the planet. Considering all the weird droids they pull out of in front of the Lars homestead, who knows what other curious odds and ends they had hiding away in that thing. I'm so glad that it got some love in The Mandalorian and had the opportunity to be such a great piece of not only action, but also some really strong comedy beats of all the Jawas poking out of their little hatches. Sure, it's not the fastest, not the sleekest, but like the best things in Star Wars, it has a story to tell. Great thoughts, a great favorite from Michael. Ken, what do you think about the Sandcrawler? How do you react to Michael's thoughts?
Michael, I wish we were at a bar at Star Wars Celebration and you and I were, you said that to me in person, because the next half hour of your life will be locked in. I do love the Sandcrawler, and I love it for a little what he's describing. We did talk about this on the Mandalorian stuff, and I love, you know, I think you might have said it or tweeted it first in my world of the patio furniture on the roof. You know, and I've talked about it, though, like I was obsessed with like knowing what goes on inside an AT-AT, and that's why, which is one of the reasons I loved seeing Luke being dropped off to Vader in Return of the Jedi. And you and I did, you know, 2 hours scene by scene breakdown of emotions of the theme. But as a kid, I was just like, wow, I get to see what's inside the AT-AT, because I used to daydream. And yes, there's cross section books and I love those. But as a kid, you didn't have that stuff as much. Sandcrawler was one of the ones I was obsessed with. And I love that the Mandalorian, we get to see the control deck, the cockpit, if you will. And I love, even in was Attack of the Clones, when Anakin's going around and he's asking Jawas, and they have those two or three that are like open and the back is dropped down. I remember like freeze framing on the VHS tape to be like, what's going on in there? I love it because of what Michael's talking about. I'm right there with you, Michael. It's just like a giant RV, and I want to know what's going on inside there. And I might want in.
Right. It's not even just like an RV. It's like an entire RV camp in one larger RV. Not that they have the single vehicles in there, but hey, I love what Michael's saying about a town, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and look, I'm the kind of, I'll say it's kind of creepy. If I'm going for a walk in the neighborhood and it's later in the evening or it's the dusk and you've got your lights on and your curtains open, I'm looking inside to see what your life is like. What do you got? What do you put on the wall? I'm that person. You got to be careful with me. And I'm not peeking in the windows, but I'm just like, I'll walk by and be like, oh, couch there. I like what you did with that space. So I think I'm obsessed with that kind of stuff. And the Sandcrawler is part of that.
It really does. There's something about it that it is very intriguing in this kind of just world building way in A New Hope. But it's also got a little bit of that inside the belly of the beast of, you know, what's in there. Is it a thing to be feared, or is it, you know, 3PO is, you know, thinks he's saved, right? And then he just ends up in the belly of the beast. And I think there's a lot about the way the story around it is constructed is to invite you to want to peek in and see where the Jawas put their couch. Turns out it's up top on the patio, at least for the off-world Jawas, which is absolutely great. Yeah, and I love just thinking about it, is that, like Michael said, is like a town, it's a droid dealership, right? Like it could have one of those blowy limb wind man on top.
Sales need your needs here, right here. Yeah,
exactly. And then the last big thing for me is I just think it's one of those simple designs, right? We'll gravitate, understandably, as fans to, you know, the X-Wing or TIE Fighter for those early designs. But it is big and boxy and looks beat up and brown, but just that energy that it is kind of lifting toward the sky with that kind of energy that's striving upward just a little bit is there's just something kind of interesting and inspiring. It's about that design, even though it's a real functional, brutal thing.
Mm, yeah. And you talk about this lived in and going back to New Hope. It's like, it sounds like I'm just like, you know, going over the top, but this design is almost as important as the X-Wing because it made it all real.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The way it looks so beat up, but it is still functional and just slowly rolling around. Hey, this is the way this galaxy works. Everybody has to find a way to get by. And this is how these Jawas get by, rolling around in their big car dealership, Sandcrawler droid dealership. Great, great thoughts from Michael. And we're already super excited. Ken, do you want to take the next one?
Yeah, this is from Jorge Castro. And he writes, favorite ship, Plo Koon's Delta 7 Aether Sprite class light interceptor. He says in parentheses, had to look that up. And you know what? There's no shame in that, Jorge. Look it up. We do all the time. Why? He says, I love the overall design and aerodynamics of the ship. Looks like a mini Star Destroyer. Ah, good pull. And I also love the distinctive striped paint job that the Jedi Master gave it. That is wonderful, Jorge. I love this choice, Joseph. I know Jedi starfighters have a special place in your heart.
Yes, they do. I really, really love this design. I like the idea that the Jedi's personal ship evolved in Revenge of the Sith to beginning to have these sort of reflections of TIE fighter ideas. But I believe it was in behind the scenes videos that came out on the old internet before Attack of the Clones, where they talk about how part of the design of this ship is seeing the echo of that triangle shape and seeing these ideas starting to emerge. But I was just, I loved this simplicity of this design where it is just the Jedi, barely room for a droid, technically, maybe even logistically not actually room for a droid. And, you know, I think also just from the story of it, of really getting to see Obi-Wan of like, this is how I go on missions, the hyperspace ring, it just one Jedi against the galaxy. Love it. And then to pick out, as Jorge does, Plo Koon's, I got it Googled, pulled up here. Yeah, it's the great, you know, darker blue with all these lines of white energy shooting forward. Great.
Sorry, I'm doing that as well too. Oh yeah, gosh, that's right. It's that is the most distinctive paint job I think out there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think we got a couple different good paint jobs. Obviously, you know, Anakin and Obi-Wan's are both you know, pretty distinctive, but that one's really, really cool. How do you feel about this ship overall, Ken?
I mean, well, I might be adding to cart this Lego ship. I have not seen that one. Look at that. I love it. I love the Jedi Starfighters. I've been low-key kind of obsessed with them, especially the Vector. I love the Vector in the High Republic and just what it's described as and what it, you know, Lie of the Jedi. It's just, it's so key to the story, but it's interesting. And I just like the idea. There's something about these Jedi who... you know, especially when you meet Obi-Wan and you got Luke, and that's kind of who you're exposed to, and the rest are just rumors and legends as you're in your mind as a kid. They come back to the prequels and they're like, yeah, no, we got our own ships too. I love the hyperspace rings, great concept for me. And I just kind of, and I love that they're tiny and that they're, you know, they almost have the kind of, you know, there needs to be in the High Republic, there seems to be actual express, like organic connection to them, but it just all made sense for the Jedi. And that it wasn't necessarily, you know, the ARC 170s are kind of like the X-Wing, you know, forebears. So these are just, you know, they do the designs and you get a little bit of the TIE fighter design and Revenge of the Sith. But I like that they're kind of their own thing. And the Jedi at some point were like, yep, we need ships. We gotta have her.
Yep. The ships in Revenge of the Sith are the ETA Actus class, ETA 2 Actus class. So, you know, different design, but the Delta 7 has often been where my heart is. I do like that the Jedi all have these same ship, but then you can see that personality, that diversity in the paint job is a really cool thing. And I struggle to stop myself from relating everything back to toys. But sure. I might need Obi-Wan's ship, Obi-Wan's Delta 7 at some point. I almost got it back in the day. I didn't collect a ton of the Attack of the Clones figures because I didn't like, I was not in a great financial place. And also, you know, they had those big splayed limbs. But I remember I had a credit card just about maxed out and knew I needed to stop. And I was like, but just one more splurge, I'll just get Obi-Wan's Aether Sprite and just get, you know, Jango Fett's Slave One. Like, no, can't do it. So I remember the pull. But this is Plo Koon's beautiful blue and white ship that Jorge is talking about. Any other thoughts for you, Ken?
No, other than that, I love Plo Koon getting mentioned, man. I think he's a well-respected but underrated character.
Yeah. We get to see him enjoying the use of this beautiful Delta 7 in the Clone Wars. So we are going to move on to our next favorite ship vehicle. This one comes from Michael McCarsel. Michael says, I'd say my favorite ship would have to be, what do you know? We just mentioned it, Ken, the ARC 170. Not only do I love its design as a precursor to the classic X-Wing, but even more so for the memories I associate with it. The one and only time I've ever been to Disney World was in 2006. While we were there, I also got to go to the Lego store. Until that trip, I hadn't even known that those existed. My grandmother had given me money to get myself souvenirs, so I was incredibly excited, to say the least. I made my way around the store in absolute awe at all of the incredible sets, but unsure of what I wanted to get. That was until I saw the ARC 170. I immediately settled on that. My mom tried to dissuade me from spending all of my souvenir money on that one item, but I had to have it. When we got home several days later, I got right to work on it. It was the biggest Lego set I'd ever done. I was in love with it. It's sadly been lost to time and multiple moves, but I will always love the ARC 170 for all the fun I had with that set as a kid. Thanks, and may the force be with you. Thank you, Michael. That is a great memory. Ken, this is not only a ship I think you and I both like, this is a tale of Lego. What is your reactions, your thoughts?
First of all, yeah, the ARC 170 is just a great design. I really love it. Love when it pops up. Love flying them when I get the chance in any game or anything like that. So we talk a little bit about that. But yeah, this is what we were talking about up top, the heart, man, the memories. And I've been there. I've been there where you have that fistful of sweaty allowance dollars in your hand. Or grandma gave you a card and a 20 fell out. And what's the greatest moment of your life? And then, you know, you get taken to a toy store and put in front of choices. So many choices. And you have a limited amount to make. You so many choices, so little results, really, really. You have to choose. And it's so tough. And I've been there. I've been there, Michael. And I've been there, too, where you're like, you know what? I'm going all in. Sometimes you make a great decision, like this ARC 170 Lego set. Other times, you know, I made a bad decision one time, G.I. Joe. I got the oil rig base that they had. you know, I still have it. My dad called me up not too long ago. He's like, you have it's like an oil rig. I go, yeah, just hold on to that. G.I. Joe. It's a G.I. Joe thing. So sometimes you can make a bad decision, but the right ones, even little, that Bespin, I got the Bespin, security guard, the Asian gentleman with the little mustache that's in the Empire Strikes Back, and they released a figure of him and some of the other ones. And I got that guy and I love that figure and made me love the character. And so I'm right there with you, Michael.
Yeah. Well, if this is the set that Michael had, it also comes with a Kit Fisto, Captain Jog or Jag, I can't tell, clone pilot in R4P44. So hey, I think Michael got a great deal. You know, I'm right there with you. If I started telling stories of those crucial moments where I chose one toy over another, we would be here until at least tomorrow. So I really really relate to that. I love the ARC 170 so much. I think partially, like Michael is saying, it is the X-Wing connection, but I think of many, many different things across Star Wars where there's a little bit of generational storytelling in the design where one thing is clearly leading to another.
Yeah.
There's something real special about the ARC 170 because it is so clearly building toward an X-Wing, but it's also entirely its own thing. The difference in the wings, they having the kind of the little ones above the big one, but having that weird snub turned down nose, like the... Yeah. I know the X-Wings are described as snub fighters, but every time I see ARC 170, I think little snub nose.
Yeah, literally, yeah.
Yeah, and so I love the design of it. It's real emotional moments for it and for its pilots in the beginning of Revenge of the Sith. And then I always liked it, but playing these in the pilot part of Battlefront 2, I believe this ship has a cannon that fires behind it. Mm-hmm, which, mm-hmm. Boy, I'm not the greatest pilot, so I love playing the ARC 170 so that you can, hey, if somebody follows me, I can hit this button and shoot them down, and it's great. Yeah. I don't even have to aim.
Yeah, I'm not good at that. I'm boots on the ground. I'm boots on the ground. I'm with you there on that. One thing, you know, you talk about the design standing up on its own. It absolutely does. And it's from, well, the prequel era, the designs of all the ships are, you know, the N1 starfighters, everything are very sleek and very, I've heard the example of, you know, think of a car in the 1950s versus a car in the 1980s or 70s and the original trilogy. I'm looking at the ARC 170 always has had a little connection to me of like a World War II fighter, like a P-51 or a Spitfire or something like that. All those kind of great kind of classic planes, fighter planes. And it's the same thing, but technology takes them in different directions. And it just had that kind of, it's bigger. It's a bigger ship, but it's got that compact kind of classic older style to it. And that's one of the reasons I loved it too.
Yeah, you're so right. It's got a little bit of this almost insect quality, like it's meant to swarm, like it's meant to outnumber, there's a power to that. I love that it's the ARC comes from aggressive reconnaissance. Whoever got to name it that, not in the real world, but whoever in the galaxy of Star Wars chose to name it that, has really got a flair for the dramatic. Aggressive reconnaissance. We're just gonna see what's going on, you know, reconnaissance, but then we'll probably shoot something that's there. Which is absolutely great and also tempted. to track down these toys. So we'll need to move on to this conversation before I just start hitting buy on various things. Any other thoughts on the ARC 170, Ken?
No, so glad Michael brought it up. I had the notes in front of me, but I hadn't scrolled down to remind myself that that was next. And so it's just, you know, it's so weird when you one thing inspires another, and it's a shared journey for a Star Wars fan. So thanks, Michael.
Yeah, yeah. And the final thing I'll have to say about Michael's is, you know, people give us such great thoughts and great memories. And I just really love hearing these human stories about this one specific magical day. And Michael's got so many great details about the only time he'd been to Disney World and, you know, everything coming together that his grandmother had given him that money. And even this sort of great, hero's arc where, like, you know, my mom tried to talk me out of it, but I answered the hero's call and I bought my ARC 170 Lego set. It's a great memory and it is a very well told, which makes it even more powerful. So thank you so much for sharing that, Michael. We are going to take a quick break and then we will be back to discuss even more favorite ships and vehicles from that galaxy far, far away. We'll be right back.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JenniLanda.com. That's JENILANDA.com for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as Jennifer Landa 1138.
We are back to discuss more favorite ships and vehicles in Star Wars. We got a bunch of great points of view on favorite ships and vehicles from some of our listeners on Patreon. So we're going to dive in to keep reading them, keep discussing them. Ken, do you want to take our next one?
I'd love to. Andrew Holmes checking in here says, hi, Ken, Joseph, and Jennifer. People may think this is an easy answer, but I got to be true to my Star Wars loving heart. It is the T-65 X-Wing. Man, oh man, I love that ship. It represents in my mind the rebellion and all they stand for. These ships are the symbol of hope and overcoming immense odds. As a kid, the thing that always first captivated me was the sound of them taking off from Yavin 4 to attack the Death Star. Up until this point, we had the glory of the Falcon and the screeching of the TIEs, but the slow passing thrum of those X-Wing engines as each fighter rises and flies from the Musashi Temple filled me with excitement, thrill, and anticipation and fear. What would they all make it back? How were such a small band of fighters, especially a pre-special edition of many more, going to survive an attack on something as devastating as the Death Star? That sound is forever with me. I get the same feelings each time I hear it. This love of X-Wings came back with a vengeance for me in the lead-up to Force Awakens. I was so insanely excited for the movie after the teaser trailer, but then the first official trailer dropped and the atmosphere shot of a T-70 X-Wing shooting at a TIE over Takodana appeared, accompanied by the trademark engine thrum and blaster fire, and I screamed to my computer and threw both hands up in the air. Tyranny had clearly returned to this galaxy. The symbol of rebellion and resistance of hope was right in front of my eyes again. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Then the movie came out. X-Wings on the water, the whole Takodana sequence, and then Poe enters the oscillator through a gap, which means he has to close the wings. S-foils, I cried. JJ is too often criticized for the nostalgia factor, but for me, it is a visual and oral symbols that do a lot of cinematic storytelling, like the fact that we see the arrival of the Citizens Fleet and the Rise of Skywalker from the perspective of Poe and his X-Wing with his ship in the foreground. Talk about hope. Oh, that's a great shot. Anyway, I could happily ramble forever on the X-Wing. It just looks so cool, too, and its symbolic meaning for me in all movies. You can only imagine my reaction when Luke levitated his T-65 out of the waters of Octo to pass it along to the next generation of heroes, Jedi. Needless to say, I love it. It was also a toy that I never got to own. Star Wars toys were always harder to come by in Australia. However, when they released Luke's vintage collection X-Wing 18 months ago, I finally fulfilled my childhood dreams, saved all my adult pocket money, and now have my own symbol of hope and resistance to fly around my house going pew, pew, pew. It may or may not be a weekly ritual. Thanks so much for all you do for us. May the Force be with you. Side note, Ken, I also love the Y-Wing. Side note, I really love A and B wings. Triple side note, all wings report in. That is beautiful, Andrew. A story, an adventure, a journey. There's so much in there. Gosh, Joseph, the sounds, the hopes, the hope, the symbol of hope, all that stuff. And then, yeah, it coming back and what that meant to a lot of us. Great stuff from Andrew.
Absolutely. This is one that I needed to hear. It is a good thing to hear because, you know, we've talked about it. There's a lot of criticisms through Force Awakens for not, you know, having enough new stuff. We've done whole episodes about all the new ideas that are in Force Awakens. There is a part of me sometimes that's like looks at how much, you know, Lucas said, great, for the prequel trilogy, it's a different era. We're doing a different look. Do you think that Star Wars only looks like this? We're going to have all these new aesthetics. And there's a part of me that sometimes thinks, well, was the choice to stick with, you know, TIE fighters, Star Destroyers, X-Wings, you know, would it have been better to have something bold and new to see the evolution there? And sometimes I personally wonder about it. On the evil side of it, that's the story of the First Order of, in some respect, of evil doesn't change. We're going to try it again. Here's the TIE fighters, but they have more weapons now. And here's the Star Destroyers, but they're have more weapons now. And it's all this sort of like saying, let's build a big gun again. And that makes sense to me is a criticism of evil in its rigidity and its lack of creativity. So then I'm sometimes like, well, if we want to make that contrast, then maybe the good guys should have evolved a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I'm really, really moved by what Andrew is saying about what it means to him, what it means to Star Wars to have this consistent fighter be a symbol of hope and have the resistance be... The resistance isn't just the evolution of the way the galaxy was going. The resistance is this explicit, the threat has returned. Nobody believes us, so we have to rebuild what we once had in this rebellion. And so why not rebuild it with a symbol that is known not only in our audience, our reality where we watch as an audience, but that symbol is known within the galaxy, and that is a symbol of hope in the galaxy. And not only is it practical, these are the ships that are still being made, these are the ships that are still around, but that they in of themselves are a symbol is really a powerful, cool idea.
Yeah, and that carries through these movies, the 7, 8, 9s so well, and through the modern era, that word hope is featured so much, right? Almost to sometimes you joke at a joke a little bit, but it's powerful. And so that word needs visual representations all through the story. I can get behind what you're saying there, and definitely behind Andrew's story.
Yeah, and I love that Andrew, you know, really he's sharing his personal point of view, but he's tracking through I think connecting, you know, it is a hopeful moment. It is a fist pumping moment when those X-Wings buzz the lake on Takodana, and that great sequence of Poe taking out all those TIE fighters, those First Order TIE fighters is so great. It's really fist pumping, but to really connect it to, you know, here is that lone X-Wing of Poe's is the one that's spinning up to see that the spark has become a fire and that all those ships from the Citizens Fleet is there. That's really powerful to me. It's a really powerful argument that it is important to continue the image of hope in an X-Wing.
Mm, absolutely. Another part of this I love, Joseph, is, you know, we, without a doubt, we love sounds, sound design, sound effects, sound cues, whatever you want to say. You know, every time I talk about the seismic charges, like, you know, I talk about it too much almost. I love it so much. But I love what Andrew said here. I know exactly that moment, that feeling he's talking about, the whine of the engine. We talk about a connection to, you know, World War II stories and George cutting up a little animatic based on, you know, World War II movie footage. Like, it all kind of tracks of just this sense of dread, but again, an underlying feeling of energy and momentum and hope and what you could maybe pull off. And I absolutely love everything he's describing about those sounds and sequences. And I think a lot of us fans, whenever you discover New Hope, or connect with that. They know that feeling whenever you first saw it, you just get that sense of, this is it. This is the big one. And I love that he highlighted that too.
Yeah. And it's great to hear the toy journey, because the X-Wing is one of the toys that I had. I coveted it so much. And I have to ask my parents. It's my 8th birthday. And I don't know if they, maybe they did some lottery or something, because they didn't usually have enough money. We didn't have enough money for playsets a lot. And for my 8th birthday, I got Dagobah, which I really wanted, the Dagobah playset. And I got the battle damaged X-Wing, where you could put stickers all of these burns on it. And it was just, you know, the greatest thing ever to be able to, you know, put the wings into to lock S-foils into attack position myself. So I had a real, you know, toy journey with the X-Wing too, that it really solidified, like, you know, I really connected with Luke, and I needed the X-Wing to really explore Luke's journeys and fly him around my bedroom.
Love it. And I want to highlight too, and being a Y-Wing fan, I've many times joked, and it's a joke, but I've joked about the X-Wings are kind of the quarterback of the team. Like, of course, everyone's going to love them, and they're the ones in the Letterman jacket, and everyone cheers them on. And I'm over, the Y-Wing is the lumpy, slow ship that just kind of does a lot of the heavy lifting. All right. I stand by that, but it's also a joke. But I absolutely love them too. Like, I'm staring at the Tally Lynch's A-Wing that's in a box on my desk right now. The B-Wing is just, I remember a couple weeks ago, Alex Damon and I played Squadrons. I appeared on a show, Comp Chatter, and I was like, I haven't flown the B-Wing yet, man. He's like, it's trippy. I was like, I got to experience that. So, yes, I'm with you. All wings report in, Andrew. All wings indeed.
Oh, Wings report in. My last thing about this is I think, like Andrew's describing, I've had this long-term relationship growing up with the original trilogy with the X-Wings and with those noises, with hearing the S-foils lock and unlock. But a big part of that journey for me was how much I loved the Rogue Squadron video games for mm-hmm. Nintendo. And the X-Wing, the design on that video game, the X-Wing is really the quarterback, right? It's not the fastest, but it's pretty fast. It's not the sturdiest, but it's pretty sturdy. When I think about X-Wings and kind of the thrill of them, I kind of get this visceral feeling of flying it in those video games. In particular, the fact that you could move faster when the S-foils were locked. And when I just had all these like flashes of emotion from Andrew's great description of seeing Poe have to zip through the wings to make it through the hole in the oscillator. Mm-hmm. Like I can feel that because I've done that. Right. I've been like, well, I was flying around fighting, but now I got to get over there so fast. So shoom, and then open them up right at the last minute, right behind a TIE fighter. So you can open up fire. So great.
Oh, man, isn't it great being a Star Wars fan?
It really is. So thank you so much for that. We're going to move on to our next favorite ship and vehicle and or vehicle. This comes from Adam Knight. Here's what Adam has to say. At first, I was leaning towards the most obvious hunk of junk in the galaxy for all the most obvious reasons. And while I vividly remember bursting into tears when the Garbage Will Do reveal happened in December 2015, I would be remiss if I didn't highlight what was clearly the greatest vehicle in all of Star Wars, the speeder bike.
Yeah.
After watching Return of the Jedi in theaters at 7 years old, there was no greater vehicle for me to imagine zipping around in. For years, every bike ride ever was accompanied by high-pitched, whining sound effects in the belief that trees sedately passing by me were actually zipping past at breakneck speeds of sheer almost doom. Somewhere in my collection of broken and well-loved toys, I still have the pieces of that old Kenner toy. The one with the spring-loaded exploding action that spent many a day trip, car ride, beach adventure, G.I. Joe mashup, play with friends, zipping around, and randomly exploding everywhere. And besides, bikes are just cool. So a speeder bike, the epitome of Star Wars cool. Ken, did you write this together with Adam?
Well, even down to, he says he was seven when he saw Return of the Jedi. So, I mean, I'm going to assume 1983 by the reference of G.I. Joe as well. But I was like, you could have saw special editions in the theater and been seven too as well, which is, again, I love that shared journey over many generations. But it seems like Adam hung out with me. Adam, did you go to Margaret Harlow Elementary School in Arroyo Grande, California?
He also has an oil rig.
I'm sure. It is oil rig. Yes. Did you put the decal on your Cobra Hiss tank on crooked and it stayed with that until this very day that's in my storage shed? I look at it and go, that decal. Yeah, man. I mean, yes, no secret. I love the speeder bikes. But a lot of it, it's exactly, again, going to the heart, going to the connection. I just was so wowed, right? So wowed by what I was seeing in that sequence, and I just couldn't escape it. And the design, and look, I won't touch a motorcycle. I am a scaredy cat of motorcycles, all right? Not for me. But I did ride a bike slowly, not even steadily, up and down my street, just pretending to be on a speeder bike. And it was because of that sequence, everything he's describing, the sound effects, the editing of that sequence, all the things you grow to appreciate later, doesn't matter. You're sitting in the theater going, I cannot just believe what I'm seeing. And it's funny, you look now, all the effects hold up. I don't know, not necessarily, but I don't need them to. They're so perfect in my mind. And that's why every speeder bike I buy just takes me back to that.
Yeah. Yeah. The speeder bike is just absolutely great. It is, that whole sequence is great for lots of deep reasons. I think of, just seeing Leia charge into action. It's one of the last moments where sort of Luke is just like, what? I'm just trying to use my Jedi skills to further the cause. Wait, no, I can be sensed by Vader. There's a lot going on there. Absolutely love the chase. The speeder bike itself, just visually, aesthetically, super cool. The utter speed, the trees, there's something about it that does just absolutely capture the imagination. I think particularly if you see it young and you have a toy that you can express it with, really, really captures your imagination. I also think it's just, it's one of the scenes that I think about when I think about the way that Star Wars is structured, the way it is, this deep story about family and mythology and all these hope versus fear. But it's often, especially the original trilogy, just really constructed as an adventure serial as well. And this is one of those scenes where it's just like, it's the chase. Mm. It's the speeder bike chase. That is what is going on for a good stretch of the movie. It's the thrill of it. Everything that's happening matters to the plot. The characters are being advanced based on their choices, but it's a thrilling chase on awesome, strange space bikes.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, there's so much. Yeah. Again, that thing of the toys of when you take it home. And I can't remember when I first got a speeder bike toy. And that's part of the imagination, right? I did not have one right away. I have them now. I have boxes of them, I think. But I've told the story. I've written the story, but just like there was a palm tree in our backyard that was crooked, and so I could climb on it. Like I didn't need a speeder bike toy. I just needed a palm tree, and that was my speeder bike. So yeah.
I got a lot of the Return of the Jedi toys, which is partially, I think, because they they stayed around and were released, for quite a while. So a lot of them I got, much later after 83. I started, got some of them in 84, 85. I think it was 86 when I got a TIE Interceptor. But I never had a speeder bike, probably just because I never prioritized it, but I always coveted it. So it was one of the things that I was like waiting for Power of the Force 2 to put out. Cause like, okay, I'm an adult. Now I'm getting that speeder bike, damn it. And I'm going to enjoy the hell out of it, which I did. But I think there's just such a power to what Adam is saying, your great tree story. I didn't have a speeder bike as a kid. You know, it was your tree. It was your bike. For me, I think, my speeder bike was blue and had some random stickers on it. Baseball cards in the spokes to make cool noises. But I just love the way that Adam says, the one that spent many a day trip, car ride, beach adventure, G.I. Joe mashup, that idea that these toys are symbols of the specific moment in the existing story, but that when we take those toys home at the right age, they become this place of just pure imagination and have all these different adventures is what makes them so powerful.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Adam, we would have been good friends.
Yes, exactly. All right. We have broken this up into two episodes because we got so many great thoughts and favorite points of view on favorite ships and vehicles. So we are going to share one more, and then we're going to do a second episode with all of the other great entries. So our final one here is from Jim Mason. Ken, do you want to take that away?
I absolutely do. Jim writes, I love a lot of vehicles from Star Wars, but nothing has lit up my imagination like the Y-Wing Starfighter Bomber. I'm hanging out with all my friends today, Joseph. This is great. He says, maybe it's because those nacelles remind me of ships from another space franchise, reinforced by watching Luke adventure through the galaxy and one in the Russ Manning newspaper strip said after the movie. Big pull. Maybe it was the ERTL diecast to my parents got me for Christmas that I still have to this day. I love when toys last 40 years with your life. Maybe it's because Jim writes, it reminds me a lot of a real world A-10 Warthog that could lose half a song from flash cannons, drop its payload and still safely return its pilot back to base. Over the years, cannon has further reinforced my life of this design. In the Clone Wars, it was heavily armed and armored, the turret man instead of automated to defend the crafter and attack runs and rebels. It was stripped down and headed to be scrapped by the Empire before they were stolen for rebel use. And those stripped down decades old fighter bombers served as a central role alongside their faster, some may say sexier counterpart and acquitted themselves effectively with honor. There's a lot to be learned from the Y-Wing. Sure, you can have a tough outer shell and do the job, but it's what's on the inside that counts. Just ask the survivors of the Orbital Battle of the Battle of Scarif what their opinions are. Just three of them were instrumental in taking down the Imperial Star Destroyer Persecutor. Y-Wigs for the win. Dun, dun. This is great. This is great. Seriously, I'm hanging out with buddies. And Jim just made me think of something, Joseph. I want to get your thoughts on this, but I got to put a pin in something. I just made a connection I never really made my entire life. Wow, I'm learning things.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
My favorite G.I. Joe vehicle is the Cobra Rattler, which is an A-10 Warthog.
Oh, wow.
I never connected that I, much like myself, am a slow-footed bomber.
I kind of do think, because I'm tempted to ask if it's like, oh, do you think you were subliminally connecting the Y-Wing to the AT Warthog? But I think it is just something that you gravitate toward, the steady workhorse who can take some punishment but get the job done.
Yeah, you know, everyone wanted that Sky Striker, the G.I. Joe sleek F-16 there or whatever it was. I wanted the Rattler. I love the Rattler. And Wild Weasel was the pilot. I could go on for days about it. Great early issue of the G.I. Joe run where the Sky Striker and Rattler faced off. Oh, so good. Jim, wow. Again, we're hanging out on the playground. There's Joseph, you're right. And you're so good at finding themes and everything, Joseph. I think, yeah, you just discovered a lot about me. I resent you, X-Wings. I'm over here in the corner doing everything. It's not always the case. I'm sometimes an X-Wing. I want to be an X-Wing. But there's some. And also, I can't run for nothing. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just that's natural. That's healthy to me to say, you know, some days in some situations you want to be an X-Wing, you know, balanced and maybe turn some heads. Some days you want to be the A-Wing, real flashy, moving fast. And some days you just want to be the Y-Wing, just actually going behind everybody, getting the job done.
And some days you want to be the B-Wing, drunk on a couch.
The B-Wing just bursting into a party and making it all about you, weird B-Wing. all wings report in. We're happy with the weirdness of B wings too. Yeah, I think there is something great about Y wings. There's a strength in them just from their initial appearance in A New Hope, right? They're having just one other ship, then the X wing adds this variety, and it even with like a limited budget and only being able to see so many ships, it suggests a much larger galaxy. So that's really cool. And then their development, that they are bombers and that they really rely a lot on the ion cannons, really makes them super different in the story. But then the way they get developed in the Clone Wars, we just watched that Zilla Beast arc. It's got some just great Y-Wing action shots and that, you know, slightly different design that connects to the design in the original trilogy. There's so much about them that's cool that makes them really different. But I think for me, my most visceral emotional connection to the Y-Wings is playing them again in flying games. When I've been playing the Battlefront 2, Y-Wing is my favorite for sure. Like, there's something about the way that Battlefront 2 space in pilot combat is constructed that I never feel like I can move quite as fast or vary my speed as much as I could in those Rogue Squadron games that I really like. So the Y-Wing's real slow.
Yeah.
But the Y-Wing just can take so much damage.
Yes.
And you can be so tactical with its ion cannons. It's totally like, I don't know, there's just something emotional to me about that with the Y-Wings of like, this is a weird analogy, but it's like, it's kind of what you're saying, but if you were, you know, trying to resolve a problem and there's like some great person in the room that everybody loves is just great and making a lot of noise about what you're gonna do, and then the Y-Wing just comes in behind and just does it. Doesn't make a lot of noise about it, just does it. And that is the utter power of the Y-Wings to me.
And what Jim's talking about too also, by the way, you're making me think of sometimes you're flying the Y-Wing in the Battlefront 2 and you're just like, go, you're jamming on the turbo button, but you know you gotta take it. The Scarif battle, I mean, that I highlighted that one before, but just like, it was for me it sitting there just going, yeah, they finally get their day. You get to see fully what they can do, and I love that. And then to connect it to Rebels and to see the big picture of how they go steal those, and then in Rebels they say, we got to get this to Dodonna's cell, and just those kind of little canon connections. And it's also an emotional canon connection of just the clunky Y-Wing that was in the scrap heap is going to help save the day. I love that too.
Yeah, it is. It's a great, I think, as Star Wars develops and has all these different ships, it's always one of the great images that the Empire has all of their sort of rigid conformity in their ships. And there's all of these different kinds of ships that have different strengths and different weaknesses, but you combine them and you have, you know, like in Alphabet Squadron, you have this unstoppable force because you got all these different kinds of ships. And the Y-Wing is just such an important part of that. And it's great that in modern canon, clearly people who grew up with the Y-Wing, depending on, you know, regardless of their age, clearly people who love the Y-Wings are getting to tell some stories in Star Wars, because the Y-Wings are really getting moments to drop some bombs and shine.
Drop some bombs and shine. That's a great song.
It is, absolutely. All right, so I think we made a good choice to split this up, Ken, because we always have so much to say in response to these great thoughts. So that is our episode for today. Thank you all for sharing your favorites. Like I said, we've got a lot of more great favorite ships and vehicles, so we're going to be doing another episode just like this with even more favorite ships. Ken, for now, where can people find you on your other adventures?
Yeah, follow me at KedNapsok or go to KedNapsok.com. You also can check out the GPA.fun for the company we got going over there. A lot of cool things there coming, you know, working out the kinks. It's been a lot of fun just kind of building the company over there and using community to do it. It's like a good rebellion.
Excellent.
A little messy, a little stumbly, but we'll get there.
Yeah, I'm sure you have a great fleet of Y-Wings all ready to go. You can find me on all the social medias at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my other podcast, Obsessed, comedy albums, future live shows, all of that on josephscrimshaw.com. You can like Force Center on Facebook and follow us on Twitter is at Force Center Pod, and buy our merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can support our Patreon by visiting patreon.com/Force Center. More stuff always coming there soon. But for now, thanks for listening. And as Obi-Wan Kenobi once said, another happy landing.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.